Good morning. Good to be with you. Took my name tag off because sometimes I tear stuff off of my shirt when I'm waving around. I have heard about your school meetings here. We have a school meeting, school meetings similar to this twice a year in Belize. And so I've been involved with that for a number of years, so it's exciting to be here and see what you guys are doing. Near where we live in southern Belize, there's a river that runs out of the mouth of a cave, and some of you here know exactly what I'm talking about. You've been there. It's a great place to swim. And near the mouth of the cave, there's a near-vertical rock wall and a fairly deep pool underneath. You can climb up about 30 feet and then jump down into the pool. The pool isn't very big, has a lot of big rocks around it and a log, but it's deep enough if you go into the middle of it. A number of years ago, the young boys were climbing up there. A number of years ago, I climbed that wall and to do it too. It's quite a climb, kind of holding on to little shrubs and whatnot to drag yourself up there. I got up there and I looked back and I realized, you know what? The climbing back down is not an option. From here, you only jump to get down. I looked down in that pool of water, and what seemed like a swimming hole when I was down there looked like a teacup down underneath. And I could see through the water. It's really clear. I could see the log. I could see the big rocks. I could see where I wanted to land. You could just barely see the rocks that were underneath you, and that sloped out a little bit. So you had to jump and clear that and hit the deep spot. Well, the rocks are harder than the water, so I jumped. And I survived, as you may have noticed. And I've often sort of philosophized about the jump. You know, there's that moment that's the jump. And we have a lot of those moments. At least I feel like I have quite a few of those kinds of experiences in our lives. And, what does it take? And yet, if you think about it a little more, you realize that what happens before and what happens during are really important. And once you've jumped, there's only one thing to do, which is just to come down. the important part has been done. And, that's what we're doing here this morning. We're trying to get some of those ideas in place, get some of that preparation done, so that here in a couple weeks, when we go back to our schools and we jump, that we land correctly. it goes well. So we're going to talk about maintaining your classroom, and I feel like there are a lot of places we could go with that. Probably one of the first things that came to my mind as I thought about that topic was simply this, and I'll kind of try to draw this on the board. So maybe that's enough to get the idea. There's your school year. I'm going to call this on a scale of 1 to 10. My school years usually seem to go like this. And I'm talking about student motivation, learning attitude, enthusiasm, willingness to do homework. Kind of when I was thinking about this, I did a little spreadsheet and graphed it, and I graphed all these separately, but it really works out to about the same thing. My classrooms usually start out about here, and there's this initial kind of nervousness everybody has, and kind of some are reluctant to go back to school. Some are kind of nervous about this. Maybe they're not sure about the teacher. Usually it picks up pretty fast. And so we get this nice bump. Things are going great. It dips maybe a little bit, but there's Christmas. Comes back up again. And then it drops off pretty steeply here. And kind of rallies just a little bit before the end of the year when everybody knows that they almost made it. I don't know if you've taught before, that feeling may be kind of familiar. That's one of the first things that went through my mind. I hope that what I say will apply to you, because I might mention that in our school down there, where I teach, we have 30 high school students. Once in a while, we have a high school student that grew up speaking English, but most of them come speaking a dialect of a Maya dialect. Occasionally, we have a student that comes with Spanish or Garifuna as a first language, and so English is almost always a second language. They come from government schools. They come from a couple of our schools. They come from a children's home, and so we get this incredible variety of students, ages 12 to 20, all in high school, all with a different school experience. You talk about a variety of different children and a variety of different things that they bring to the classroom. First thing, I'm just going to read Luke 14:34, familiar verse. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? I think your first job in maintaining your classroom is maintaining yourself. Keeping your love for God fresh, keeping your relationship with Him vibrant, even keeping your mind sharp and your body healthy. There are these things that have to happen for you to be effective day after day. And the first year I taught, I did some jogging. I wasn't really a jogger, but I'd go out and I'd do a little jogging just because I knew I had to get out and do something just to clear my head and keep myself going. Because through the year, in your classroom, especially thinking about your spiritual life and your relationship with God, you're modeling something to your students, and we've heard some about this already, but you're modeling the love of God, the justice of God, the grace of God. You're modeling this to your students. So you have to also be in touch with God yourself. Jesus asked this question: if the salt have lost savor, wherewithal shall it be salted? How's it going to get salted again? And then he doesn't really answer it right there. How's it going to get salted again? How's it going to get salted? It's not?
Isn't it going to get thrown out and trodden underfoot?
Okay, if it can't get salted again, it will. But I think there's something else in there too. And correct me if I'm wrong. Because what I see in this is Jesus standing there and asking this question: wherewithal shall it be salted? And I guess if we have that picture, we can probably look at Jesus asking that question and say, there. I think he's the only one who could do anything about that. And so if you feel like you get into the year and you feel like this salt doesn't have any more saltiness, I sprinkled out everything I thought I ever had, and I've shaken until there's nothing left, and I'm empty, I'm done. And remember that Jesus is staying there asking that question, and you can look right to him, and he is the one who can do something about the lack of saltiness in you and me. He's the one that can give the salt back its savor, put his grace and beauty and power back in your life. I was involved in construction for quite a number of years, kind of in between teaching and still some. And I often thought that if I could draw a picture of something, I could build it. That's kind of how I looked at it. And so I frequently did a lot of drawing or drafting when I was building. And so I would like to just think about the classroom that you're building briefly, because in this graph, you are here, right? So you still have a chance to kind of try to conceptualize, try to think about what you want to have when you start school. And I realize there are a lot of factors that go in there. Sometimes I tell people, after all these years, I'm still a stupid optimist. I still keep thinking that the impossible can be done, that ideals are attainable. You know, I still think that after all these years. And I just refuse to give up. So I'm sorry. But you know, I think it's good to go with some ideals at what you want to achieve. You'll realize that as you get into a particular school setting, there are all those other factors, what's been done before and what's expected, and then we'll get into some of that. But for learning to take place, and we talked about some of the ingredients of learning, learning takes place in a learning environment. I think that if the learning environment is in place, most children learn, even if you walked out of the room. I don't know what the percentage would be, but I would say more than half of your job is maintaining the right environment for learning to take place. Now, when we started school down there, I went down to help start the high school, and I got there, and it was 10 days after hurricane had gone through. There was no power. There were still trees down. Our church buildings don't have windows and doors on most of them, so they gave me two folding tables in the corner of an open church building with some folding chairs, and they said, here, you have school here. And so, okay, we could probably work with that. Where are the books? Maybe I should be looking over the books. The principal told me, well, somebody told me you're bringing the books. Okay. Well, I brought a science book, and I think I had brought a math book, so maybe I can look at those. Don't you have anything? They turned up a few old textbooks. And so we kind of put that together, and I had to write most of the curriculum that first year from scratch just to try to get going. So, but most of the time you go in there, and most of your material is there. You need to open the books. You need to know the material. You need to be able to inspire their interest in it. Yes, but most of the information, the material is there. You're there to inspire and generate that, generate their interest and proctor that process. So you need a semblance of order. You need good attitudes. You need teamwork. You need a challenge that needs to be met, something that needs to be accomplished. And then I believe that most children will learn. So let's think just briefly about the culture of your classroom. And if you have your notebooks, you could go like this. You could grab your notebook and take it out and write down these things that you think should be part of the culture of your classroom. I'm just going to describe a couple classrooms, and you can kind of think about this. We are hardworking, hard-playing, go-getters, problem-solvers, overachievers, creative. Okay, that sounds like a fun classroom. We are another classroom. Idle, lazy, unambitious, lacking imagination. We feel entitled to the good things. We gravitate towards shallow entertainment, and we appreciate appearance over substance. Maybe some of you have been stuck in classrooms like that. We are timid, listless, bored, but taught not to show it, cooperative, but shallow, and we will say what people want to hear. A particular classroom can often develop a particular culture, might call it. The children kind of learn to behave in a certain way and show a certain face to you, the teacher. A lot of factors can affect that, but the teacher has a big impact on that. And previous teachers, if you're coming into a new classroom, have probably had some impact on that. But it's good for you right now to think about what kind of a culture you want to encourage and develop in your classroom, because it will make your job a lot easier or a lot harder, as well as the teachers that follow you. Be realistic. Young children need some things that older children don't, and vice versa. I used to make coffee for my oldest couple children when they were, I don't know, probably started when they're less than two. Since then, I've actually once in a while calculated how much I spent on coffee raising my children, and I've thought, why did I ever start that? But, you know, it'd have a lot of milk in it, a little bit of coffee, a little bit of sugar, and we'd sit there. And I told them, hey, you know, put your hands over your cup of coffee like this. You know, it feels it's kind of warm on your hands, and it keeps the heat in, and it's kind of fun. So we'd sit there with our hands over our coffee cups, and we'd take a drink, and then we'd sit there like that. And they're probably one and two or two and three or something like that. Anyway, I kind of got a kick out of it the other day. I didn't mention it to him, but I saw my son sitting there, and he had his hands over his cup of coffee just like this, just like he did when he was two. You know, that was nearly, wasn't quite 20 years ago, but those habits that are taught to small children can become very ingrained, and I don't know if I legitimately trace it to that, but I think that's where it came from. So when you have little children and you teach them things like, you know, we're having devotions now, fold your hands and put them on your desk, put your feet in front of you. They don't need a lot of explanation, but those things are good and help pattern their behavior. So if you're teaching little children, kindergarten, first grade, by all means, gently train them into those traits, which will make it easier for them and easier for you for years and years to come. Older children, and the students I teach are obviously older, I approach it differently. I have to. I could drive myself and them totally crazy, trying to make them always fold their hands a certain way and keep their feet in front of them. I tell them things like, sit up straight. You're falling out of your chair. You want to look like this when you're old? You know? And I give them a reason for wanting to be tall and straight and have good posture. Get up and tell them to do some calisthenics. Stretch out a little bit. You'll feel better and be easier for you to sit straight. I think it's important with older students. They're reasoning through everything. They're going to reason through it whether you tell them, whether you give them a rationale for what you're doing or not. So it's, I find it helpful to give them some rationale to make them think about their actions. If you're teaching in a new area, as some of you probably are, make sure that you know what the expectations are, where you're going. If your students are expected to raise their hands and say, sir and ma'am, then I think that's your job to uphold that and carry that tradition forward another year. That's part of what you need to learn from the school board, from the principal, or the other teachers, where you're going. What if you get into a school where the students weren't taught a lot of things, where there weren't very many guidelines, and nobody seems to care a whole lot what happens? Probably some of us have found ourselves in schools like that. I think it's important, and maybe most of us teachers can't imagine finding ourselves in this place, but I've seen teachers that tried to set everybody straight. And 18 or 19 year old teacher going into a new community, wants to set the children straight, good, wants to set the parents straight, a little harder, needs to set the school board straight, a little tougher. Just go slow on that. The key word is communicate. You have real needs in your classroom. You have real things that have to change to make it work. Communicate from a position of humility and openness and invitation for parents and school board to get involved. And communicate that, and communicate it early, and communicate it well. That's very, very important. Also, be concrete about your objectives. When you communicate with parents and school board, be really concrete, be really definite. Now I'm slipping over a little bit, because there in Belize, we end up having to do a lot of things. So I find myself sometimes being parent, teacher, principal, and school board in the same year. So as school board, I'm going to say to you teachers, be really definite, concrete. Say, hey, we've got a problem in school. Students are passing notes. We want to stop that problem. You know, be definite so we can say, oh, okay, let's see. What can we do about that? If you say, well, the students aren't very well behaved, they don't listen very well, we'll still want to know, well, what aren't they listening about? And give me an example, and who is it, and what are they doing? Because that helps us work with the problem. If you find yourself in a school with a lot of difficulties, pick your battles. Pick out what's really important and tackle it with a will. And if there's some things that, you know, you'd say, well, that's not on my list of ideals, you know, that's, I don't think that's perfect, but you might not be able to fix everything. Pick the things that are really important and get some help and communicate, work on that. It's also a good time in your school year right now to ask yourself a few questions. Now, we're thinking about maintaining your classroom, but to me, so much of maintaining is going in there with an idea of how you're going to manage these things. How will your students ask questions? Will they raise their hand? Will they say, Mr. Dan? Will they say, sir? Will they just blurt them out? How will you respond to those questions? How will they come into the classroom? How will they go out? What are you going to do the first day? I guess I'm presenting some of these really simple things because my first year of school, my first day of school, I had no answers to any of those things. So one of my students raised his hand halfway, and another one raised it all the way, and another one raised it halfway and started talking. And I didn't know which one I didn't know how we were going to do it either. So I hadn't really thought everything through. So I went home that afternoon with a splitting headache. Literally, I did. Feeling very desperate. Not being able to remember what we did in school at all. So, but those things are very helpful for you to decide some of those things ahead of time, and you can communicate it on the first day of school in a very simple way. Boys and girls, you have a question, just raise your hand. And I will, you know, and if I raise my hand, then you know you're just going to have to wait a minute till I get over to you. Whatever, you can make it really simple, and they won't feel condemned, and they won't feel criticized, and, you know, you're not telling them, don't do that again. Raise your hand next time. No, you don't. You can explain it in a very positive way. So, will you open your day with a what I call a popper? Maybe something different each day, just a little bit. Like, here's a riddle for you, or can anyone tell me how many eyes a spider has, or what's the grossest animal in the whole world? Or, can you do this math problem in your head? Or, I'm going to teach you something in Spanish, and I want you to use it all day. So instead of saying thank you, you're going to say gracias today. You know, just simple. But you're just going to give them, you know, you're just going to give them something each day. And then maybe by the end of the week, maybe they'll be able to say several things. Things like that I like because it's a routine that varies. You can do basically the same thing every day, but it's different every day. And so think of all the things that that affects. Well, they'll kind of want to get into school on time, or they know that they'll miss the joke of the day, or the riddle, or the fun fact. You know, they'll know they'll miss it if they're 5 minutes late. So they'll kind of encourage them to get in there and be in there to laugh with everybody else instead of having to hear about it at recess. It will immediately turn all the switches on, right? Because here's something interesting. Here's something fun. Here's something, you know, we never did this before, and it's different every day. Anyway, that's an idea. Things like that help us maintain some alertness and some attentiveness and take out maybe some of the repetitiveness. Just briefly, think about the culture of your classroom versus the rules that you're going to have to make for your classroom. You're going to have to make some rules, and it's important to make some rules, and it's very important to keep the rules, to enforce them in a right way. But if your students are motivated, if your students are interested, if your students feel that hard work is honorable and good grades are an achievable goal and worth the effort, and you have this positive culture in your classroom, you have done away with the need for most of the rules and most of the discipline that you could have to deal with, because your students just aren't going to go there. It's still important to make some rules. I think it's important to make a few rules and enforce those rules and clearly state them, simply because the students need to learn what rules are, and they need to learn how to follow them. They need to learn to relate in a right way to rules and to authority. So, you know, if you have a rule, raise your hand. There's something going on when we just learn to accept that and follow that, and cooperate with that, that's good. Which we could talk about patterning, which I think is something very important, which is going on in a classroom. Whether it's a rule and you just learn to kind of follow the rule, patterning happens in a lot of ways. And maybe one of the most important ways I think it happens, and we tend to overlook it, is even the way you relate to your students one-on-one and personally. You're patterning them to accept or to expect a certain kind of behavior. And that's why it's really, really important to relate to them in a positive way, in a respectful way, in a way that communicates to them that you love them, you accept them as an individual, they're important, and at the same time communicates a kind of respect. And probably a lot of other things that you could put into that. Here's one place that I've often talked to some of our teachers about it, and I might throw this out, especially for the men. You have girls in your classroom. You treat them with a very clear level of respect as young ladies. And, you know, you may say, well, I'm just kind of the happy-go-lucky, you know, pat everybody on the shoulder kind of guy. And, you know, okay. But you have a job to do to communicate to the young girls in your classroom that they're young ladies, and that they deserve and should expect a level of respect from every man they meet. And you are communicating that to them for 170 or 180 days. You better do a good job. And you're patterning them to accept a certain kind of relationship and to reject other kinds of relationships. And that's something huge. That's something important. So maintain that right reserve and respect, and you could still have an interest and attentiveness to their questions and to their needs. But there are a lot of places, I think, where patterning affects our students, and it should be something that makes us think about how we relate to them in the classroom. In our setting in Belize, visiting with people in their homes or going to see somebody is a really big thing. It's within the culture there that carries tremendous import. So if I come to your house just to say hi, shake your hand, sit beside the door and visit, I'm communicating something huge to you. That's within our culture there. So for our teachers, I often tell them, look, if you want to make your school year go well, and you want to forestall all kinds of problems down the road, then this is what you do. Here in the first week, you go around and visit all the parents and just go say, hi, I'm your child's teacher. I'm looking forward to it. And visit with them. Oh, so what are you cooking? So is that your horse? Wow, nice horse. Okay, so just visit. And they will feel like you put them on the map. They are a real, live, important person to you. And they will talk to you. They will actually come talk to you if they need to, because you've come talk to them. And probably problems may even arise. Their children may even come home and tell them, well, you know what that teacher did? And they'll say, but they know you. And they'll put a tremendous stock in the fact that you made an effort to establish a relationship. And they may come talk to you, they may not, but they'll feel tremendous security in the fact that you opened that relationship with them. You know, I think sometimes that would work here, maybe better than we think. And if you teachers would make a point to go, am I importing an idea from Belize? If you would make a point to go visit all the parents and establish that relationship before the year ever really got underway, you might be surprised how many problems we forestall and how much that improves the communication through the year, how much greater respect we have all around. Okay. There are a few other things that I thought of, and in relation to maintenance, and there are probably many other things that you may think of, and I hope that you tell me what they are. Tell us what they are. Now, I realize as I do this, I'm going to betray probably what kind of a learner I am because I think in pictures. But I often think of learning like this. Like a wave, like an ocean wave. And I've watched guys surfing out there, and I'm not really, I never surfed. I jump in the waves, but I've never surfed them. But the motion of the wave is moving that way toward the beach. Which part of the wave are you going to surf on?
Front.
You're going to surf over here, right? Right? And if you get up here, it's going under you. And if you're back here, it's all over. And learning seems to work that way, my observation, in my sort of whatever farmer way of thinking of it. That's kind of how learning works. You have to be on the front of the wave. There has to be all this previously acquired knowledge and experience pushing the process forward. And you're going to find this through the year, that you're going to have students that get behind the wave. And that's kind of tough. You're going to have students that just slip behind, either because they weren't paying attention or because they aren't learning as fast as the others, or maybe they need to be learning it some other way, and they get behind the wave. And that's tough. So maybe in your workshops and your discussions, you can think of some ways to keep them where they need to be, where they are able to use what they know to gain new concepts and to keep learning. And if you find they're slipping back, sometimes we just have to back up and catch the wave, because learning is not really taking place anymore. These guys are swamped. These guys have missed it. And I'm teaching nobody in the room. One more suggestion I had was start a notebook today, right now, and put down some good ideas, some crazy ideas, some weird ideas that you think might help you in February and March, okay? Because when February comes around, often we are at least as dull as the students. And so I have a lot of great ideas in September. I do. I have fabulous ideas in September. I say, I'm going to use that later in the year. And later in the year, I can't remember what those good ideas were. My mind's fogged over. I'm just trying to get through one more day. That's a terrible confession. So kind of write some of those things down and keep that there, and you'll have those inspirations as you go along. And from time to time, you'll say, now's the time to do something different. These children need something different. Why don't you go on a spider hunt? That was one of the ideas I wrote in mind. That would be good for smaller children. Go on a spider hunt. You know, you could use art class, incorporate that. Make some little nets and some little traps. And well, you could hunt spiders, you could hunt caterpillars, you could hunt crickets, and you could make a zoo. You could, an art class, you could make some neat little cages with little doors on them and stuff, and you could pop them in there, and you could talk about what they eat and how to feed them and how to take care of them. And you could stretch this thing out for quite a while if you wanted to, and you could incorporate a number of things into it. But initially, your year's dragging, hey, let's do something different. We're going to have a spider hunt. You guys, let's make some nets and stuff and get ready. You could cook something, make something. I thought, well, what if you made up your own espresso drinks? You know, maybe your children wouldn't be interested in coffee, but you know, you could invent some of your own. You could even give them your own names. Maybe you could make ink and quill pens. If you have somebody who has a goose, you could say, today we're going to write with our own ink and quills. Those are just a few that occurred to me, and you could think of hundreds more, and you could share them with each other and fill your notebook. But we need a few of those sometimes through the year when we realize that everybody's getting kind of sullen and slow and losing interest. Well, I hope all of you have a great year, and I hope that the interest and enthusiasm of your students and you carries you through. Look to the Lord. He's our strength and our inspiration. He is the restorer of our souls when our supplies have run dry.